If you're just getting into long-range hunting or you're looking to increase your skills as a marksman, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Extreme Outer Limits Podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Outer Limits Podcast. Really excited today to be here with Bob Beck. All of you guys know who Bob Beck is. If you know Outer Limits and you're here watching this podcast, he's the reason that you're here. So I would like to give Bob a little bit of an opportunity to let everyone know some of the stuff that they may not know about him. You know, a little background, how you got started, where you grew up, what made you get into this business, and just talk a little bit about who Bob Beck is and how you got to where you are today.
All right, that's going to be a deep hole, but I'll see if I can dig out of it. So, Kelly, I mean, you know, we've had a long history together, and you kind of know the story, but we actually did a TV show called Who We Are. But with many things in television, right, there's so limited amount of time, and you can only put so much out there. So some of this might be a little redundant if anybody had watched that. But, you know, basically, my road for this entire extended range hunting, we'll call it, came from wanting to just be a more successful hunter. You know, truth be told, I've been doing this. I think we're going somewhere between transitioning from 17 to 18 years. And the vast majority of those years were just to be more proficient on hunting, like I said. So I was doing construction. I was doing real estate development. You know, when I got out of school, I went on into construction, and I kind of found my way through that and tried to exceed and excel everywhere I could. By doing that, I was able to, you know, go on a few more hunts than maybe the average guy, whatever it was. And it's amazing when you go on these hunts how many times you're sitting there talking around the campfire and the story comes up of, I seen this giant and he was on top of this ridge, and, you know, by the time I figured out how I was going to get over there, he'd already walked away, or, you know, crested the ridge, whatever it was. And when you started thinking about all the times that happened and relating the distances, it just seemed to constantly be, it was 600 or 700 or maybe 800 yards away. And most the time you're like, well, how the heck am I going to bridge that gap? So you'd assess the situation and say, well, if I run down here and I go over there, well, that works, you know, maybe often, but maybe not as often as we'd all like, because it takes time to go from here to there. And maybe by the time you get there, the animal's already fed off or went and bedded or whatever, right? It's just not there anymore. Or even better yet, you actually do make the stalk successfully, don't have it exactly pinpoint where it is, the wind shifts, this, that, whatever, it sees you, boom, it blows out, and all you see is a tail running away. So going back and back and back, I think I learned from the school of hard knocks, really, because I had this idea that there is a way for me to shoot from here to there and cleanly kill this animal. I just needed to figure it out. And, you know, had I had more of a target background, like you, so to speak, I probably would have went a little bit smoother road. I probably went the most difficult path possible. But what I did was I started doing all the research on the optics, you know, like, well, what scope would get me here? And back then it was, well, what reticle or whatever. And so you purchase one and give it a try, and it would have its limitations, you know. They were good tools, but they only had so much they could do. And then we'd work through that, and then we'd figure out, well, what cartridge could, you know, actually shoot a bullet big enough that would make it through the wind and get there. And, oh, man, this went on and on and on, you know. And so years of trial and error and trying this and trying that, we started to, I say we, because as I started doing this, eventually Chris got kind of into it. We started finding success, and we started being more successful in these hunts. And so it's kind of interesting how these worlds collide. I know I'm kind of getting down this hole and I'm coming back, but all this time I'm still building houses, putting in subdivision lots, pouring foundations, right? Doing everything we've got to do on the day to day. And this is my hobby. It is consuming me. every minute of every day. Well, construction sites are the greatest, right? Everybody wants to talk hunting. So if you're not hunting, you're talking about wanting to go hunting. And if you've been, you're telling your stories. So it was, you know, life was good. And quite honestly, I basically got sucked up in the 08 deal, right? In 2008, it was a rough time when all the residential loans and all the residential lending started getting reorganized. And where was all this unsubordinated money going? And on and on and on, right? And, you know, hats off to the guys that made it. You know, they had grit. They just put their head down and they weathered it out. And some of my buddies now, they even say they're doing better today than they were then. How, I don't know. It's not my world anymore, but that just wasn't my path, right? Like, I probably was fairly scorned on the changes that were happening to our business. And I was just bitter, I guess, is the honest answer to the whole deal. So it was kind of irony when that thing was unwinding. There was a lot of days at home where it was like, what am I going to do with my life, right? You're still dealing with the day-to-day of trying to figure out how to hold on to this subdivision or this house, or is this one going to sell? But the buyer pool was getting so tiny that every time you had a hot lead on a buyer, it would disappear, right? So typically most of the days were a lot more bad news than they ever were good news in that time frame. So what do, right? Start talking about hunting. I just want to go hunting. I want to get out of the stress. I want to leave this behind. And here's where the irony kind of came in. I was doing some shooting and hunting, and I was getting success with it in the extended range game. And so I got approached by a producer to do, basically be the trigger puller for a short 30-second commercial spot. There was a commercial that needed to be filmed. They wanted some targets to get hit at distance, and I was pretty proficient at doing that. So I agreed. It's not like I had anything better to do. If I sat home, it was just gonna be more bad news. So we went out there, did some shooting, and you know, TV producers being what they are, it started out like, have you ever thought about, you know, maybe doing this a little bit more, maybe showing the world what you could do? And quite honestly, we weren't the first, right? So there was other guys already on television doing this. You had Best of the West, and you had Long Range Pursuit guys, right? So we kind of had to look at this and say, well, what is your deal, or what is your stick going to be, right? How can you be different? And when we went through the couple days of shooting for the commercial and conversed and had some dinners, it was kind of just genuinely an opinion that, you know, you got something going on here that is uniquely different, and how you go about it, your approach, what you're doing. And the fact that, you know, maybe you're just a new breath, fresh air. And that kind of leads to our relationship. Because I left there, I went back home and got back in the vortex of dealing with trying to unwind the, you know, real estate company. And I remember it still at home, might even have been around dinner time or something. I basically just look at Chris. I had nowhere to go with this. I had no founding facts, no basis, no nothing. It's not like I ever done it. I said, hey, what do you think about doing a TV show? She looked at me like I might as well have been standing on the moon. And I'm like, you're going to do what? I mean, she says to me, she's like, this isn't one of those deals where it's like you just say you want to do it and you're going to do it. I remember this. She's like, people don't just say you're going to make a TV show and you just get a TV show. And I'm like, hold on. I appreciate all that, but that's not exactly what I asked you. let's take this one step at a time. I asked you, do you think we should do a TV show? Does that sound like a good idea or a bad idea? She's like, it's so outlandish, I don't even know how to answer you. I said, all right, I'll take that as a yes. Let me kick the can down the road a little further, see where we go.
You know, it's funny. I can remember when you first came to me, I said, have you ever done a TV show before? And you said, no. And I said, what makes you think you can do it? And you said, well, I mean, you know, there's nothing to it. Well, I'm sure that you really didn't believe that when you said it. But, you know, it amazed me how you were willing to take a risk, go out on a limb, do something that you'd never done before, had enough faith in your ability to learn and to make good decisions to think that you'd be successful at it. And I don't think that from day one you ever doubted that you could do it and do it well.
Well, and man, it is not about my ego, right? And I appreciate that. I think I've been fortunate in life, just in general, right? Just life in general, to have surrounded myself or been lucky enough to been surrounded by people that have had greater wisdom than myself. And from early on, even into my early 20s, I have had people that I had considered mentors or much smarter people than myself, whether it was just generally smarter about a particular hobby or a way to build something or a way to shoot, or maybe it was a mentor and somebody was a better business person than I was. I think what I realized from an early day, and don't get me wrong, I mean, everybody's pride and ego gets in your way sometime, but is my ears are always open and so are my eyes. I'm looking, right? Because if there is a better way to do something, I'm damn sure going to do it that. You know, I'm going to change. I'm not stuck on my way. And so where I'm kind of leading with this is, you know, I think it comes down to that if you surround yourself with people that can ultimately help get everybody in the team where we want to go, then you're less likely to fail. So I can't be for sure, because there was probably a chance I was trying to convince you as much to have confidence as me as I was sitting there holding onto the shred of confidence. But I think that if you go in that manner, it is difficult to fail. You know, you can lean on your team.
Well, it was clear to me right off the bat that you were willing to listen to me on things that I had some experience about that you didn't. And that kind of convinced me that, man, if this guy isn't just out for the ego boost that you get from being on TV, and it became very clear to me early on that it really wasn't about that at all. It wasn't about you being on TV. It was about you being able to share what you know and your passion with other people so that they could get jazzed about it too. And I think that one of the things that's made you so successful in everything you've done within the firearms industry is that people get that sense that it's really not about Bob Beck being on TV, but it's about Bob Beck sharing what he knows and what he understands and helping other people to, you know, to kind of live vicariously through him, through your hunts, and giving him an opportunity to say, hey, look, yeah, maybe I can do that, and I'm going to get to know Bob a little bit better, and maybe he can help me out. And I think one of the best things about it is that, as you know, because you're in the TV business, monetizing a television show is very difficult. I mean, if you were expecting to get rich on the advertising dollars that you get and the revenue, you'd have probably been out of business after the first 2 years. But the fact that you started the store, which I think was a brilliant idea, is just one of the testaments to how Bob thinks about what will make his job of basically educating the public about long-range shooting and hunting. What's going to make that easier for me to do, and how am I going to be able to provide for my family and do that too? So, you know, I think you've had a great attitude about the whole thing, and it's worked out really well. I want to get back to something that you talked about a little bit earlier. When you first came to us and said, you know, would you like to sponsor my TV show? I said, no. And no, I don't. And you said, oh, well, why not? And I said, well, I'm not really sure that I believe in this long range hunting. And he says, well, what if I told you that I promise that I will make education and practice the main focus of everything that we do, so that people don't think just because I went out there and shot something at a really long range that they could do it too. And I said, okay, if you make me that promise, I'll stick my toes in and we'll see where it goes. And that was the first season that we actually made a few rifles for you to use on your hunts. You had already filmed your first season of hunts. So you were hunting with McMillan fiberglass stocks, but they were made by another manufacturer other than McMillan.
Right. Yeah, just for that first cycle.
Yeah. But that brings me to my point. You, from day one, are a firm believer in having the best product, using only the best equipment. And the only way to be successful is if you have all of the right components. And you, even before you knew me, or you knew that you wanted a McMillan fiberglass stock on your rifles. You knew that you wanted a match grade stainless steel barrel. You knew that you needed some sort of custom action that had been worked and accurized so that you could maintain that accuracy at long range. So that convinced me that, yeah, that's the kind of guy I want to get involved with in a business venture. How did you come to that conclusion? And what was it in your, you know, growing up and your experience that says, look, you know, yeah, this is okay, but I think I need to do it better?
You know, I'll try not to throw anybody under the bus because it's not what it's about, but I was using, so stepping back to the construction days, right? And you're working and you're hammering up houses and you're doing your day to day. And at that point, I was really, I mean, genuinely 100% on the consumer side of this deal, right? I had no idea of the internals of this industry. I was just looking for the best widget to achieve what I needed to get done on a hunt, right? And what I found was there is tons of great companies out there making tons of great products. And I even say it very clearly in my shooting schools now, you know, hey, there is several different tools in a toolbox. It's just about picking the right one for the right job. And so when I look at manufacturers across the country making, you know, all types of different products, it's not that there's necessarily good ones and bad ones. It might more is be that tool just isn't for that job, right? And so that kind of is where I'm going to get to your answer. What I had found out through trial and error, well, let's just take reticles and scopes, for example. So there's not a ton of knowledge out there to tell you the difference between first focal and second focal. So you would look at a reticle and say, well, you know, well, the manufacturer says that this line equates to this yardage. Well, does it on every magnification or only on maximum magnification? Okay, so there's one thing. Didn't know. I'm just a consumer putting the thing on my gun, right? The other thing you don't know at that point as a consumer is, yeah, so even if you understand which magnification setting it's going to properly work, well, where does air density come into play? Back then, it was like, well, I don't know. The bullet comes out of the end of the muzzle, and I'm going to shoot it over there, right? Well, that bullet is going to travel 800 yards or 600 yards, whatever it is. It has a certain amount of resistance or lack of resistance, and that's going to affect its trajectory. Well, I didn't know that, right? So, okay, so you go through buying a bunch of different scopes, and then everybody knows what I use now. Well, I got there way before the television show because I figured out, okay, well, these turrets and this particular design of scope helps me mitigate all of these items. And now I can actually consistently chart my trajectory from the muzzle to target, right? Okay, then you get along the path of guns. Well, quite honestly, back to it, there's plenty of good manufacturers out there doing their best job to make a good firearm. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that it was, very clearly answering your question, that made me realize I'm gonna need to be at this level with my receiver, this level with my stock, and this level with the barrel, is the unaccounted for shots. So again, not picking on anybody, but something that I guarantee, because I've seen it so many times, so I'm figuring we all put our pants on the same way. If I'm seeing it, everybody has to see it at some point, right? You'll go this shot and that shot, maybe a group of shots, and then sooner or later, somewhere along the way, you're going to have a shot that you're just be like, I have no idea what happened. And maybe responsibly we're going to say, well, crap, did I pull the shot, or did I do this, or I do that? And maybe you did, maybe you didn't. But if you see that over and over and over enough times where you just, especially if it's in the moment of truth, right? Like a coos deer or a blacktail, maybe something that's extremely challenging to even find one that's legal, let alone trophy size, and then you're basically trusting that that shot is going to be the one that's going to go true and not one of the flyers that goes off to Neverland that we don't know. Now, I wasn't about that. And without going through the trials and errors I wouldn't have known it. But truth be told, when I had met you, I was like everybody else. If you're a gun guy, you're a gun guy, and you don't ever seem to stop buying guns. Those calls, I love these people to death, but it does crack me up when a guy calls me and says, I'm looking to get my last gun, and I'm thinking an MOA rifle is going to be it for me. What cartridge would you, would you suggest? And I hold back the chuckles, because I'm hoping to build a relationship, right? Like, I treat every one of my customers like their hunt might as well be my hunt. But I know inside that when I give that recommendation, I'm going to think of a pair, right? So if a guy calls me and says that he wants a 6.5, I know most likely when I get that phone call the second time in 6 months, I'm going to put him in a 30 cal because that's a great pair, right? Or something like that. Because when you get down buying guns, I mean, it's economics 101. We're going to keep working and we're going to keep spending. So when I met you, I was in that phase where I had about, I don't know, for argument's sake, let's say 32 or 36 factory rifles set up with, I would say more conventional optic choices. And I was going through Gun Broker and just whittling them things out the door, because once you get into the game, you know, with the McMillan rifles and the MOA rifles and everything that we're able to do now, that consistency isn't 9 out of 10. You know, it's 999 out of 1,000 or something, and the 1,000 is something I probably did. Once you get that feeling of knowing the bullet is likely going to go right where I'm aiming if I do this, this, and this, there's no other feeling of confidence you go to the field with that's going to make you, that's a done deal. So hopefully that answers it.
You know, I think shooting is a lot like playing golf. If you've ever played golf, you know, you watch the PGA on TV. Putting is extremely difficult. Even a 5 or 6 foot putt, you can walk up with one hand and hit the ball in the cup. And I've done it 100 times playing golf, being close enough just to tap it in with one hand. But when there's something on the line and you stand over that putt, it can be the hardest putt you've ever made, because everything that's involved in making it now all of a sudden makes it that much harder. And I think shooting at an animal makes that happen. And confidence is 100% a huge part of shooting, just like it is playing golf. And if you don't have the confidence in your equipment, that's why I tell everybody, you know, for the history of McMillan fiberglass stocks, we've always told everyone, if you want the gun to shoot absolutely as good as it can, you need to glass bed it. That doesn't mean that it doesn't shoot really well without it, and maybe just as good. But if you're a competitive shooter, or if you're a long range hunter, and you've got that deer out there at 1,000 yards, and you say, I wonder if I should have bedded my stock, you know, and you don't have that confidence, it's going to make it more difficult to be successful. So that confidence means a lot. And I think that in knowing that you've got the best equipment that you can possibly have, and you know it as well as you can know it, that makes every shot just that much easier, which makes it that much better.
You know what I like about the market right now is I think a lot of guys are, well, heck, we wouldn't even have the lights on in the shop if it wasn't for a lot of guys that are starting to think along those lines. For me, it's always been a priority, right? It's like anything in life. You go on about your day and you're balancing family and you're balancing your kids and you're balancing tuition or sports or whatever it is. You know, your finances are only going to stretch so far. I get it. But if this game is important to you and you realize, oh, like I talked to some of the guys, right? Think about it just beyond the hunt. What are you spending on taking a week off of work, right? So even if you've accounted for the grocery list and the gas and the hunting tags and all of your gear, whatever, well, what about what you're leaving back at home? So everything has to click in my mind. I guess I'm methodical that way. So when I look at that entire arrangement, at the importance level it is for me, I look at, well, I'm going to maybe save this much more this week or this much more this month, or maybe I'm going to cut that, you know, soda out at the Quick Mart when I'm getting gas, whatever it is, because I know that I'm going to put, you know, that extra $100 or whatever it is into my gear list, because what's really important to me is those 7 days that I'm out there chasing whatever game it is that I'm chasing. And I think as we've gotten, well, and throw another debacle into the mix, look at how hard it is to draw tags nowadays and how extremely important the preference point systems are in these states. If a guy's waiting 10, 12, 14, 15 years to draw a tag, it's nice to see that putting importance in his gear. I'm pretty excited. If there's any point I'm trying to make here, I've been fairly excited to see how the market has turned. Guys that are doing it, they're really getting in there and doing it now.
I think you're right. I think people are starting to understand that factory off-the-shelf rifles have their limitations, and if they want to stretch their distances at which they are comfortable shooting, they're just going to have to make some changes. One of the things that I wanted to talk about, you and I shared an experience, and people talk about McMillan fiberglass stocks being so expensive, and I'm sure you hear the same thing about MOA rifles. Man, your rifles are expensive. But when you think about it, remember the elk hunt that you came out to film? We had five guys out there, me with the one guy with a tag and a rifle, and the rifle was about, you know, $6,000. But I had a Night Force scope on there for a couple grand. I had a Zeiss binocular rangefinder, which cost about $2,200. I had a Swarovski spotting scope, which was right at $2,000. And everybody else had that same combination of glass. There was $60,000 worth of glass on the side of that mountain with one $6,000 rifle. So yeah, glass is getting to be as big a part and more expensive than the firearms are these days.
Oh, I can't agree more. You know, what I like to think about our guns is similar lines of the glass, is that glass is the way to bridge the gap from you to your quarry. Well, now that gun can be too.
Yeah, if you can't see it, you can't shoot it.
That's right. That's right.
Yep.
Well, let's go. You know, I want to touch on one thing before you take me down another path about the education. Shooting schools. Holy cow, right? So I got my feet wet in your shooting schools is where I dipped in there. And you were on me. I mean, I could tell you were passionate when you were you were giving me the look like, dude, you're doing shooting schools. Like, there wasn't a lot of versions in where I was not going to do shooting schools based on the look on your face. And that's been a good deal, because it is a way, and we can't get everybody tuned up, but it is a way that we can get a lot of guys tuned up and you know, in the spring for a fall season. That's been a really, really good deal, and I you know, can't thank you enough for shoving me down that road. So,
well, when we had our shooting schools, we had about 65% of the rifles we sold were tactical in nature, 300 Win Mags, 338 Lapuas. So people came out, and we hired some ex-military guys to come out and teach the shooting schools. And I think for the most part that was good, but we felt like our hunting customers were saying, that doesn't really fit with what we're doing. We don't use the same language. We don't talk the same. We don't even shoot the same. So that's when I hired you to do a couple of shooting schools as the instructor for us. And I think you saw right there how much, when you have something valuable that people are there to take, how much excitement there is. And it develops really a lifetime customer when you give them not only a proficient rifle to shoot with, you give them all kinds of ideas about what they need to shoot, you know, scopes and shooting mats and bipods and all that stuff. And then you say, come on out with me and I'll show you how it's done and teach you how to do it. And the final leg of that table, I think, is you having Star Valley Outfitters now. Not only can they come out and learn everything they can from you, but now they can go to Star Valley, know that you believed enough in that outfitting hunting area for you to purchase it and to provide it for them. What a way to keep a customer for life, to give them all the experiences that they need to really enjoy what they're doing.
Yeah, you're definitely touching on what we call the full circle. And honestly, not a lot of people understand what that advertisement, I say advertisement, it's a spot that we put in our show that we call full circle. And you hit it right on the head, right? The hunting was the way to finally connect both ends. it's amazing when you get so many good people out to our shooting schools. And you can see the passion, man. I mean, they wouldn't have come all the way out here to go to a shooting school if they weren't serious about it. And so being able to say, hey, we've got great hunt for you too, where you're going to be able to apply some of these tactics with some, you know, your gear and what you've learned here in an area that's really suited well for that kind of shooting, it is nice. It's good. It kind of gives me the dad feeling of the whole thing, because it's like, yes, you know, it worked.
One of the things that I enjoyed the most was you didn't have to deal with a guide that didn't speak your language. That happens a lot of times when you go with another outfitter. Yeah, they ask you, well, how long are you, you know, far are you capable of shooting and comfortable? Tell them 600 or 700 yards, and they say, oh, we'll never take a shot that long. Well, then we're in the wrong place, guys, because that's, you know, I'm capable of it if we see the shot. And so when they come to Star Valley Outfitters, when I was there, everybody spoke the same language. They used the same equipment. They understood what we were trying to do. And that didn't mean we passed up any close shots, but that means that if the opportunity was out there at range, everybody involved was capable of making that happen.
Yep. Yeah, I quite honestly, when we got the camp, when Extreme Outer Limits acquired the camp, and you know, you're going into it and you're trying to, you know, make sure that the staff is still, they're not uneasy about new owners and things like that, and yet we wanted them to be pro what we do. I actually sponsored the guides and said, hey, you know, we've got Night Force spotting scopes and this, you know, these rifles, so you let me know if there's anything here that's going to help make your job better, and then let's talk about a sponsor program. And so like the spotting scopes are a prime example. How nice is it to go, you know, and granted, a lot of guides and outfitters have their spotting scopes, but to have the same equipment or at the same level of equipment that the hunter is going to bring, and like you're saying, being able to communicate that language, it's good. It's built-in spotter, right? That's great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you've been very successful at putting this whole thing together from day one, of not having any idea of what it was like to be in the firearms industry. Just to touch on that a little bit, how did you go from buying somebody else's products and end up having your own rifle company?
Oh, come on now. Well, obviously, I would say you've been the strongest mentor in that whole part. You know, I think that with working with partners in your instance, right, you're gonna have to go down the path that you're going, and we're trying to always keep those paths aligned. You know, we're gonna try to keep everything headed upstream. Well, eventually, the way this was gonna continue to work is we needed to be able to continue to provide a direct service, I think is what it is. Because at the end of the day, you know, this industry is not that big, right? There's only room for so much. And when you're trying to run at this level of quality or precision or customer service, it really is a hands-on affair. I mean, pretty much married to this deal. So as it evolved with working with McMillan and then going to MOA, there was a couple things that we had to do there, and some of which I guess we need to throw Berger into the mix here, because we had an idea that we were going to need to start, you know, manufacturing our own rifles, and then knowing what was on the wings with Berger, we were going to have to manufacture an action slightly different, because kind of our mindset as of late has been to break the anomaly of what is the norm. SAMI, right? We all know it as an industry standard for length and things like that. Well, as you make bullets that are going to have more upside terminal effects in the field, higher ballistic coefficients, things like that, they're going to get heavier and they're going to get longer. And when that happens, they're going to also get harder to function in conventionally designed actions. Well, we founded MOA basically on what we call our extreme action, knowing that our license deal with Berger, we were going to be working hand in hand with them to start producing some of the best, because I know what it is, but these bullets are going to not only just be the best for this type of hunting, they're revolutionary. They're going to rewrite what people think, right? There's, you could go to any retailer in the country and look on the shelf at what's there, and you, aside from maybe a different shape, a different style, a different grain, and a different way it works, it still falls into square peg, square hole, right? 300 Win Mag 180. Well, there's X number of offerings. Well, what's the world going to think when we throw a 245 grain bullet in a 300 rum with 800 BC, right? And then we put a 330 grain bullet in a Lapua and it's 900 BC, like these crazy numbers. And so we knew that stuff was going to come. It's going to require faster twist rates. It's going to require, you know, certain types of rifling that we're going to test to do this. It's going to require longer ejection port areas, and bolt stop references have to be changed. And that's okay, right? Because if we can hand deliver and customer service ensure the product that we're selling, then we can put our customers into these specialty items. And then we're also, what we run in tandem with that is eventually, if you do anything long enough, it starts to replace what was thought was the norm, right? Well, no, this was the only way you could do it. It's like, no, it's not. We've been doing it this way for, you know, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and it's 50% greater than this over here. So we're trying to not only produce what we would deem the best, but we're trying to write the book. I mean, it's exciting stuff. I mean, you can see it on my face probably. I literally go to work every day knowing that in this industry that we kind of geek out over it, I guess we say, it's in my eye. We're going to write the book. I mean, we're going to constantly be in the front of this deal.
Well, and I have no doubt that that's going to happen, knowing you as well as I do and having spent as much time with you. Everything that you've ever told me that you're going to do, you've done. So I do not have a single doubt that you're going to rewrite the book. You've already started. You've already come up with some great bullets and working with a great partnership with Berger. You've done some things and used their expertise to enhance what you already do. It's been great getting to know you a little bit better, and I'm sure our listeners and viewers really love the time that we've been able to spend here. But I think it's about time to wrap it up, and we'll probably save some of the rest of the stuff for some of our shows down the road. But I really enjoyed it today, and thanks for spending the time with us.
All right, buddy. Thanks for putting me on the spot. We'll see you next time.
Okay, bye.